Alice's front yard, I can't help but stare at the cages of human bodies on the far perimeter wall, some of them moving, some slumped in slumber, or worse. Alice hands me a sword sheathed in leather. I motion to the men with a tilt of my head. What are they doing?
They're starting their morning conditioning.
Am I not training with them? Alice squints down at me, the sunshine out in full force this morning.
Iker wants to see your swordsmanship, and there's no way you'll be able to spar if you run first, not with the shape you're currently in.
He's not wrong. I'm under my normal weight, and my strength is significantly depleted. While Fia helped me through the awakening, the muscle mass I lost during the sea crossing has never fully returned, and the stretching alone has my joints feeling a little too loose and sore. Even so, I hand the sword back to Hallis.
I'll be back,
I tell him. Then I hurry to catch up to the soldiers as they begin their run. Their initial pace is brutal, and I'm on the tail of the group. The path is along the interior wall of the grounds. A few of the soldiers catch a glimpse of me over their shoulders in the first turn, and I'm convinced it ignites into an all-out race to leave me behind. What I thought was brutal becomes downright agonizing. Each breath feels like knives in my chest, each step harder than the last. I fall behind, but so do others. It's a small consolation to know they've been doing this run for weeks, if not months, and are struggling with it as much as I am. All the time I spent competing with Aurora through adolescence feels so trivial now. We should have been competing against the boys just as hard. We've made the first pass around the palace grounds when Hallis catches up. The two of us run side by side, strides matched despite his clear ability to surpass me by a long shot. Who are they? I ask on our third lap, looking toward the palace gates. Two women stand before the iron bars. A young boy stands in front of one of them, the woman's hands tight on his shoulders. He's crying. They all are, but his tears are the hardest to take in.
His father was sentenced to the wall for not disclosing his abilities,
Hella says.
He's been sentenced to death by public execution.
Disgust sits heavy on my tongue as I look up at the man crying, hand stretched between the bars of his cage, reaching for his family, a family he'll never embrace again. It's cruel, I say. Hellas's mouth thins.
I hate the practice, but King Edmund thinks it holds heirs accountable, and it's difficult to deny its effectiveness.
As long as he didn't harm anyone, why does the king care if people hide their gifts or not?
There are good people in the world, the same as there are bad. The bad people with magical abilities are exceptionally dangerous when left unchecked.
Couldn't the same be said about the people inside these walls?
To be honest, he says, lowering his voice, I'm not sure anyone deserves magic. If Mother Nature is real, she fucked us all when she gave these gifts to us.
By the time the commanding officer blows a whistle to cease running, I've lost count of the number of laps we've done. The commander summons the soldiers into a line. His eyes stutter on me at the end, but he continues on without a word. He orders us to do a set of strengthening exercises, and then another after that, and another, and more. The morning goes on like this for what feels like an eternity until my eyesight begins to bleed into a haze and bile coats my throat.
Water break!
He yells, sending the men scattering to the water stations. My butt hits the gravel and stone of the courtyard floor, and I tuck my head between my knees to stop myself from passing out. Sweat drips down the bridge of my nose and drops to the ground. Aker's voice pierces through the throb of my heartbeat in my head.
You're pushing too hard, too fast, Jovi.
I don't recall asking your opinion. There's a nudge against my leg, and I open my eyes, accepting the water skin he pushes into my hand. I don't think I've ever tasted anything better.
2 minutes!
The commander yells. I need to get my legs under me before my muscles lock up.
Jovi, no.
Aker says, reaching for my elbow. I jerk out of his reach, and I'm impressed by my ability to stay upright on shaky legs. Aker growls my name as a warning, but I don't have energy to waste arguing with him. I find myself back in line, this time landing somewhere in the middle.
We'll do 3 minutes of sparring, the commander says,
eyes lingering on me a smidge longer this time.
Pairings will be my choice. The commander picks pairs on a whim, and I don't look away or back down when he glosses over me. I observe the bouts, some more entertaining than others. There are a few men I would be nervous to face, and I make note of them by name for possible future jaunts in the ring. Not until after watching the second sparring match do I feel as if I've gotten my breathing back under control. My legs still feel like jelly, and my arms are dead weight, but I can at least hear and see with ease again. It's down to the last two pairings when it becomes blatantly obvious I won't ever be picked. I look at Hallis and Aker, who are watching from the sidelines of the circle carved into the center of the courtyard. My pride is wounded, and anger has me sneering at them when I'm left standing at the end of training session, having never gotten my chance. The commander doesn't bother to look at me when he dismisses the battalion. I'm on a rampage as I march across the yard, temper flaring as Aker laughs at something Halla says. It falls away quickly when he sees me. He widens his stance, arms crossed over his chest as he prepares for my approach. I swipe the sword from his waist.
Jovi.
He chastises, indignation tightening his features.
What are you doing?
You wanted to see me with a sword in my hand, I declare, walking backward to the center of the ring. Well, here I am. All I need is a competitor. The remaining soldiers slow their departure to watch the unhinged spectacle of me challenging their prince.
Not after you punished yourself this morning,
Aker says, unmoving.
Maybe after a few days' time, your body will be rested enough to try again.
Seething, I turn to the open courtyard, conscious of the onlookers congregating on the veranda.
Anyone willing to go against an out-of-shape princess? I ask. Any takers?
The soldiers share looks between them, some grinning, others concerned. One brave soldier steps forward, head turning to Aker. I recognize him as one of the more proficient swordsmen. Talon is his name.
I'm willing, Your Highness.
Aker is less than pleased.
No.
He turns toward Hallis. I'm debating which insult to launch at him when he turns back around with Hallis's sword in hand.
You want to spar?
He says, stalking into the ring, swinging the sword in his hand into a ready position.
Fine.
His relaxed stance and calm demeanor are insulting. It gives me the fuel I need to energize my overworked muscles. One last hurrah before my body gives out to prove I'm not as weak as I look. I don't waste time. I advance, turning and throwing a backswing as the first strike. Aker throws his sword up in defense, and our blades meet with a loud clang of metal against metal. It's all too easy for him to throw me off with a push of his weapon.
Yeah?
He says, a hint of a smile peeking through his disapproving demeanor.
All right.
Then he advances, swinging his blade to the right. I move to block, but it's a misdirection and I stumble off balance. He lets me regain my footing before advancing again. This time, I wait until he's close before I counter his forward strike with one of my own, which he sidesteps. I know there's no way I can walk away from this match a winner, but I refuse to go down without a fight. I'll push until my sword falls or my arms give out, whichever comes first. I give it my all. Swing, block, strike, miss, 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 miss. I'm gasping for breath. Aker looks as if he's enjoying a bout of child's play. He shakes his head at me, scolding me without words. He's taller and stronger. If fighting with Messer taught me anything, it's that men are weakest when you're inside their reach. I spin left and attack, then shift right in defense, before spinning again, closer and closer. I strike until he's backed to the circle's line where the only way out is through me.
Good, Jovi,
he praises.
Just like that.
I wouldn't have thought it possible, but I'm sure my cheeks somehow redden further despite my state of exhaustion. We're less than an arm's length apart when he decides to strike. It's exactly what I've been waiting for. I counter his strike with a quick swipe and am rewarded with a sight of blood as it seeps through the paper-thin cut on the back of his forearm. Aker stares at me with a heat I can't feel because everything hurts, and I think I might be on the brink of death. My arm shakes as I lift the sword to return it to him, hilt first. He at least has the wits to ignore it.
Find an elemental to chill her bathwater,
he says to a servant stationed under the veranda. Then he gives me one last, lingering look before turning away. I hear Hallis's whispered words over the wind.
Was it the oath, or just you holding yourself back?
They walk too far out of range for me to hear Akers reply, but I don't care. Surviving is good enough for me. For today, at least. Chapter 50. It's my least favorite bath I've ever had. It's not simply cool, it's freezing. I'm positive it's at a temperature I've never felt before, and Beau has to make me get in. My body convulses throughout the 5 minutes I'm able to withstand it before I flounder out, and I'm very grateful for the food waiting on the desk once I emerge from the bathroom. Beau lounges on my bed, munching on grapes and flipping through another book. Your jaunt around the palace this morning is the main topic of conversation around here, she says. I pull out the desk chair and drop into it. I have many regrets in this life, and I have to say running those laps is close to the top. Don't write it off yet. It made a really good impression on the commander and his men. The plate of roasted chicken and peas holds all my attention. Forgoing the utensils, I tear apart the chicken breast with my fingers and shove a large piece into my mouth, heaving a sigh of pleasure at the perfect flavors and spices. Remind me to kiss Henry the next time I see him. Laughing, Beau flips onto her stomach and props her chin in her hand. Commander Imman told my father you'd fare better than most of his men in battle. I pause mid-chew. Your father is back? He is, she says, kicking her feet behind her. He called a council of his advisors to a meeting this afternoon. No one knows where he was? I ask. She shakes her head. He does this a couple of times a year, disappearing without a word. There's speculation, of course, that he spends his time with hired women at the summer cottage near the southern beaches, but it would be odd for him to take such a frivolous trip during a time like this. Time like this? Your return. Possible retaliation from Royson for eliminating the Dark Forest. Then there's the fact that Irina's family has arrived at court, concerned about the state of their alliance. She shrugs like these are of no consequence to her. And I know your mother has sent a message by now, so there's added pressure of her breathing down his neck. That reminds me, I say, wiping off my hands on the napkin. I need to call my dagger back. Closing my eyes, I pretend it's on the table in front of me. It's like wading through thick algae. I concentrate hard to make sense of the colors and shapes in my mind, looking for something tangible to hold on to. But this retrieval is proving to be the hardest yet, even harder than finding it on the ocean floor. Then, like someone opens a door, I see a room. It's empty except for a single round table at its center. I'm cautious as I walk toward it, spotting the black blade resting on the surface. I stop before it. This is a trap. It's so obvious that I'm tempted to leave it, but I promised. I try to be quick with it, try to snatch the dagger and disappear, but a hand clamps down on mine. The voice is heavy with emotion and excitement. Joe! I look up and lay eyes on the woman who has me cornered in my own mind. There's no doubt or question of her identity because her face is my own, but stronger. Age and life have chiseled away the softer lines, replacing them with renewed strength. Copper hair, lighter than my own, hangs in waves, pulled over one shoulder. She smiles at me, eyes brimming with tears. Mother, I murmur as I exhale. Then I'm back in my body, dagger clutched tight in my fist. I look at Beau in shock. What happened? She says, sitting up with wide eyes. I shake my head to stop the emotion from leaking out in my voice. I saw my mother. Beau leans forward, eyes alight. Did she say anything? I shake my head again. No, I say, running my hand over the now familiar weapon. Just my name. Just Joe. A soft smile pulls at Beau's lips. I fight the tears threatening to overflow. Standing from the bed, Beau envelops me in a hug. If she's anything like my mother, she's been planning and plotting how to break you out of here since the moment she heard you'd arrived, she says. I smile. I'm here of my own accord, remember? Oh, yeah. She sneaks a bite of my chicken. All in the name of love.
She winks at me and returns to her position of leisure. I place my dagger on the edge of my desk. The exhaustion I felt getting out of the bath is long gone after seeing my mother. I've spent the majority of my life wondering if she wanted me. I knew what I was told, but doubt always lingered, making me wonder if she abandoned me. Seeing her heals a wound I worked hard to convince myself didn't even exist. I finish my meal and retrieve the book from under my mattress. We spend the rest of our day reading. Me at the desk as I pore over the jumbled mess of text, Bo switching from the bed to one of the cushioned chairs and back again. She never truly settles. Apparently, it was commonplace for kings and queens to demand blind fealty. They'd make their subordinates swear on their lives to obey and force compliance by performing a blood oath, a ritual where a person spills their own blood willingly onto the land, tying them to their word with their magic. If broken, it could cost them their gift, sometimes their lives. A chill runs down my spine at the next sentence. A blood oath, combined with the blood of another, is considered the most dangerous. Used as a truth revealer, creating a blood oath with another while telling a lie will kill both participants instantly. I gasp out loud. Bo doesn't take her eyes off the book in her hands. I've been waiting for you to get to that part, she says, smug. Why didn't you tell me? Better question. Why didn't you stop it?
One thing you'll learn when it comes to Aker is that nothing can stop him once he set his mind on something.
She closes the book and sits up in her chair.
And you didn't ask.
I stare at the text, dumbfounded. I thought you and Hallis were angry about the blood oath, not the nearly killing us bit.
Again,
she says, throwing her hands up, book in one hand.
We are all merely at the mercy of Aker's will.
I stand and begin to pace as I read on. Those types of oaths were eventually banned after the conclave was established. Anyone caught committing the crime of a blood oath with another participant would be hung on the wall. Or worse, if a lie was told during the oath and they were killed as a result, their families would be hung on the wall in their place as a warning to anyone else who might try it. When was this book written? I ask Bo.
That's a question for my mother, she says. Sometime before my father took the throne, centuries ago.
I scour the book for the answer, but come up empty. The entire book seems more like a warning against any kind of oath, with no words in favor of any goodwill that might come from their use. Bo leaves to find us dinner, and I feel slightly panicked as I prepare another bath, out of sorts from my reading. This one is the opposite of the icy one from earlier, and I ease into the steaming water and lavender oil with a relieved exhale. My thoughts are racing and scrambling to make sense of everything. I close my eyes and concentrate on clearing my mind. Everything feels like too much, but I remember the steady words Aker spoke as he held my hand, blood seeping through our fingers. And I love her. At the time, I thought it was nothing more than a manipulation tactic, something only added to convince General Samusu I was safe with him, to leave me in Kenta's hands. He spoke the words as if he was stating the color of the sky or his favorite breakfast dish. Just a simple, I love her. A laugh escapes me, a bubble of exhilaration I can't contain before it's a full cacophony of laughter reverberating off the bathroom walls. It shouldn't matter. But I'm glad there are no witnesses to the scorching flush of my cheeks or my giddy smile as I relish the truth. Aker loves me.
Chapter 51. No. No, no, no!
A maidservant hands Aker a glass of amber liquid. He thanks her, taking a sip, face placid, when his gaze catches on me. Then he freezes, body stilling, breath unmoving in his chest as his eyes stop on my face before flicking down to my bare body. I know no one but him can see me, but I can't fight the desire to cover my breasts, hide from the gazes of strange men, squeeze my thighs tight together. Water sluices down my skin from my hair,
down my body and legs, soaking into the fibers of the woolen rug beneath my feet. He blinks and looks away, jaw ticking as he clenches his teeth. Calling the servant back over, he says,
"Please send someone to check on Princess Jovinia."
The servant dips her head and disappears out through a hidden door in the paneled wall, sealing me in with a party of 7 men. We're in a sitting room with tufted chairs and low tables laden with crystal decanters of different alcohols.
"Have we received any reports of movement?"
asks the man seated to Aker's right. It's the commander from training, I realize. Aker shakes his head, but there's noticeable tension in the gesture. A man I don't recognize sits across the table from him.
"You all right? You look as if someone kicked your dog."
The men laugh in jest, and Aker manages to loosen his mouth into a smile at their teasing. They move on to discuss the troops they plan on sending to the border, remarking on the need for fresh blood if discord breaks out into actual fighting between Roysen and Kenta again. Aker glances over at me, then curls his fingers in a come-hither gesture, drawing me toward him. I tiptoe around the high-sided chairs, careful not to bump the table or the glasses on it. He doesn't look at me as he widens his knees for me to step between his legs. Then he braces his elbows on the arms of the chair, drink balanced in his hand, an invitation for me to sit. I'm shivering, the cool air amplified against my damp skin as I debate the consequences of folding myself into the confines of his lap. It doesn't matter how much I reiterate to myself that no one is able to see me, no one but Aker, the feeling of exposure doesn't dissipate.
"Don't you agree, Aker?"
"Yes,"
he says, voice clipped as he keeps up with the conversation.
"I think a celebratory dinner would be nice."
He dares a look at me, eyes conveying everything in the split second they meet mine. "Sit." It's an order. Slow and measured, I angle my body to rest on the expanse of his thigh. He doesn't move or so much as blink as I get situated. Goosebumps erupt across my skin in response to the warmth radiating from him. I balance a hand on the back of the chair behind him, careful to not put too much pressure against the material as I lift one foot, then the other, and tuck them over his other leg. It's a tight fit, but I'm comforted by the high walls of the chair. It gives the illusion of privacy. Aker adjusts so his body is lower in the seat, causing me to lean sideways against his chest, placing my head against the cut of his shoulder. He takes a drink of his liquor, voice so low I nearly can't hear him over the chatter in the room.
"Are you sleeping?"
he says, eyes remaining on the men conversing around him. Again, I know no one should be able to hear me, but I whisper back, "I don't know. I can't remember.
I'm in the bath, that much is obvious, but I can't recall being tired enough to doze off. If anything, I was still buzzed after the connection to my mother,
as well as my realization of Aker's true feelings. I think I might be awake." He seems less than pleased by my answer. This time when he drinks, it's a healthy swallow. "You're angry with me," I point out, "because I still haven't accepted the bond." He doesn't reply. Can't. But the sharpness in his eyes, the stony way he turns his head away, is answer enough. I run my fingers over the strap of daggers he always wears across his chest. I think this is happening because the bond can sense how close I am to giving in, I say, letting the truth run free with my tongue. His inhale presses against the hand I have braced on his chest. I smile, pleased with the fact that he's not totally unaffected despite his cold exterior.
"The goods are fine." "They don't have a clue."
Words flow in one ear and out the other as I slide my fingers through the open buttons at the collar of his shirt. "I was thinking about you." I watch as he swallows, noticing the thrumming pulse in his neck. "While I was taking a bath." His breaths deepen, muscles taut as he remains unmoving. I lean forward, knowing there's nothing he can do to stop me, and whisper into his ear, "Touching myself." The muscle of his thigh tenses underneath me.
"The cash is plenty stocked."
I'm impressed, but also displeased by his ability to remain invested in the conversation. I place my lips on that thundering spot in his neck, tasting the skin with the flat of my tongue. He moves then, Bringing his drink closer to his body, he shoves his elbow between my thighs. It opens me up to him, to the air, as he pretends to inspect his drink, but he's not looking at his beverage. I suck in a breath, nerves and anticipation coursing through my veins.
Have you spoken with your father?
Looking up, Aker presses the glass against my inner thigh, using it to pull my leg toward his taut stomach, opening me up even further.
I haven't.
I dig my fingertips into the hard plane of his chest. A smirk emerges on his face as he plays with his drink, running the glass along the inside of my thigh.
You know he lives by his own timeline,
he says, sending a conspiratorial look around the room. It grazes me in a sweeping pass.
He'll get here when he gets here.
He drags the glass lower until it's almost kissing my exposed center. Aker, I warn, ripping my free hand from beneath his shirt, not caring about the ripple effect it causes as I brace my hand over his between my legs to stop him. He doesn't listen. Instead, he traps my fingers under his against the glass and presses it firmly to the apex of my thighs. The glass is warm from being in his hand, and it instantly causes a fiery sensation to ignite in my lower stomach. I squirm in his lap in a bid to get away, but there's nowhere to go. Not without spilling his drink or giving away that something's amiss. A round of raucous laughter breaks out, and Aker uses it to his advantage.
Touching where?
He whispers. Then he spreads his legs even wider, sinking me into the crux of his lap, where his erection is pressed tight against the confines of his pants, hot against my bottom. A choked gasp leaves my lips as he angles his hips and presses the glass against the sensitive bundle of nerves between my legs. My breath stutters in my chest as I wriggle in his hold. To anyone else in the room, it looks as though he's contemplative, lost to the thoughts in his head. But his eyes are avidly affixed to the space where our fingers are intertwined, where the glass slides against my wetness. The only giveaway is the quickening breaths he can't hide, nostrils flaring. He bends his other elbow, bracing his temple against a fist, and it's effective in putting pressure on my upper back to keep me in place within the bracket of his arm. There's no stopping the building pulse in my body or the hum deep in my throat. He's relentless. Fingers punishing over mine as he undulates the pressure, to the point I fear for the integrity of the glass in our hands. My integrity? On the floor in shambles, because I can't fight the pleasure any longer. I'm chasing it, angling my hips, rubbing back against his hard length. I close my other hand over his wrist, urging him to get it over with, for him to put me out of my misery by pressing harder. Harder. More. Almost. The king walks in, drawing everyone's attention across the room as I come, letting the moan I can't contain sink into the crook of Aker's neck. I undulate languidly in his lap, soaking in the last few moments of bliss. His teeth seem to crack from the effort of his restraint, but then he's quick to remove the glass. My heart is thundering in my chest as he holds it up to his father in greeting.
Come have a seat,
he says. Then he does the unthinkable and places the glass against his lips, tongue dipping to the rim when he tilts his head back and swallows the remainder of the liquid. I reposition myself on his thigh, grateful for his dark pants and their ability to hide any proof of my arousal. He sits up, shielding the view of his own physical response by placing the empty glass on the table, having to lean slightly awkwardly around me to reach. He licks his lips, eyes cutting to mine briefly. The king removes his cape and sits in the chair opposite Aker's, eyeing the assortment of liquors.
Where's the maidservant?
As if summoned, she emerges from the disguised door, head down as she walks toward Aker and halting by his chair. There seems to be an issue, she says, voice timid. Aker's voice comes out hurried.
What is it?
The princess, she says, eyes toward the floor. Bo told me to fetch you. That's all Aker needs to hear, and I stumble to my feet when he stands. The king sits forward.
I'm sure it's nothing Bo can't handle,
he says, pointed stare on his son.
We need to discuss business.
If I'm not mistaken, his eyes cut to a man standing behind the servant, a man in finery with light blonde hair and striking features. The maidservant speaks up again, though her voice is still hardly audible.
"I think something's wrong," she says, hands fidgeting before her. "It seems urgent."
"You'll have to fill me in later,"
Aker says, walking around the servant toward the door. The king's call to his son goes unanswered as Aker stalks out of the room. I race after him, eager to get away and also to find out what's happening to me that has the maidservant so alarmed. People freeze in place as Aker picks up his pace, feet pounding on the marble floor as he races to my room.
"Slow down!"
I yell after him. "I'm sure it's fine!" He doesn't even spare me a glance, taking the stairs two at a time.
"Well said, it would trap you."
A passing servant looks at Aker in startled confusion. "Excuse me, Your Highness." He ignores her as he turns down the hall. I feel obscene, rushing after him completely naked, but all I can do is follow him to my room. He barges in, eyes swinging around the empty space.
"In here!"
Beau calls. Nothing could prepare me for the sight before me. Beau leans over the tub, now empty of water, hand propping my head at an angle to prevent my chin from sitting on my chest. My eyes are wide open and unfocused as I stare into thin air. Aker climbs into the tub, straddling my unmoving body, his hands bracketing my face.
"She's alive, but her aura..."
Beau's words cut off as she looks at me. Not the physical me, but whatever she sees standing beside the tub.
"Whoa!"
Aker looks up at me, then to Beau.
"What do you see?"
"It's like..."
She shakes her head in awe.
"Like I've never seen a whole aura until now. There are so many colors. It's unlike anything I've ever seen."
That does nothing to appease Aker's worry, his focus going back to my physical body. He smacks my cheek.
"I did that," she says. "Threw cold water on her, yanked her hair, nothing."
"Thanks so much, guys." I retrieve a towel and wrap it around me. Beau's mouth falls open in shock at the floating towel.
"What the fuck?"
"Get out,"
Aker orders his sister. She looks at him as he sinks lower, his knees on either side of my legs.
"I know you're matched, but it feels wrong to leave an unconscious woman alone in the hands of a man."
Aker snaps.
"She's right fucking there, Beau. Get out."
Beau looks at where I stand, and I wave the towel to let her know I'm at least a coherent participant in this bizarre situation.
"Okay,"
she drawls as she gets to her feet.
"I claim no part in, nor responsibility for, this. Whatever this is."
"It would be weird if you did."
He cradles my face in his hands, the worry straining the crease between his brows. Then it hits me. "The bond wants us together," I explain. "As long as I'm near you, it will keep me here." Realization dawns on Aker's face and he stands, stepping out of the tub.
"I'll come back in 15 minutes.
I might need more time," I tell him. I feel fulfilled right now. He understands what I'm insinuating. The physical connection we shared created an anchor of sorts. Dipping his head in a nod, he doesn't bid me any goodbyes, gaze averted and tense as he moves around me to leave. A moment later, Beau returns to the bathroom, leaning casually against the door jamb.
"He's pissed."
Sighing, I sit on the edge of the tub, off-put by the sight of myself lying in the water. This is a disaster. Chapter 52. It takes hours, hours before I snap back into my body, normality finally returning near midnight. It's been so unsettling looking at myself from the outside, naked, exposed, vulnerable. When I come to, I'm quick to take another bath and get dressed. I find Beau dozing in the bed and wake her with instructions to take me to Aker's living quarters. She doesn't inquire as to why. We walk down the main hall, stopping at an alcove with a bust on display. I look at Beau in confusion, but she shoves her fingers in the statue's nose and pulls. The wall behind it slides outward.
Every castle has its secrets, she says.
She pulls the door closed behind us, and I focus on the sound of her feet in the dark. The hidden passageway appears to stretch the length of the castle. After taking the sharp turn at the end, we walk down another long hall before Beau comes to a stop. I don't know how she knows where we are in relation to the main rooms and hallways of the castle, but she presses against the stone wall until it gives way, creating an opening just wide enough for us to slip out behind another statue. Then we're in another one of the main hallways. Directly across the hall is a door made of iron, and I don't need her to tell me who it belongs to. I open my mouth to thank her, but she stops me with a raised hand.
Don't say a single word.
Then she stalks away, and I think I hear her gag. Looking back at the heavy door, I raise my fist to the knocker, but stop myself. I test the handle, surprised when the lock gives. The door opens to a sitting room. Dark paneled walls curve inward, and the skin of a large animal is spread across the floor. Past the leather chairs and chess table, an archway leads to the room beyond. A large bed is centered against a wall laden with weapons. Swords and knives of every kind, spiked maces and helmets, and other tools I don't have a name for. Aker stands in the door leading to the bathroom, arms folded with a towel draped around his waist. Neither one of us moves.
I don't understand why you're angry with me, I tell him.
He tilts his head, eyes stark in the lantern-lined room.
I'm not angry at you, Jovi. I'm angry at the situation.
What situation, exactly? The fact that I appeared bare or that I appeared at all? It's not as if I get to decide. His voice comes out quick and harsh.
The fact that I was robbed of my first time laying eyes on you,
he says. A sense of relief eases through my chest at his answer. You saw me when Fia healed me.
It's different. I was scared for your life.
He shakes his head.
Tonight I was forced to look away, to pretend I was unaffected by the sight of my match bare before me.
He grits his teeth to appease the anger he's contending with before continuing.
I couldn't touch you. Could almost taste you on the edge of the glass, but I couldn't have you.
My heart aches for him as I walk toward him. He watches me with sharp eyes, gripping the doorway as if to keep himself in place. Standing before him, I'm no longer scared to hold his gaze like I was when we first met, when he seemed all-encompassing and overwhelming. Now, I realize, I want to dive into those feelings.
I want all of him, all around me.
I didn't hate it, I remind him. He's not swayed.
I felt out of control. I pushed you.
No, Aker. I step forward, our chests mere inches apart as I stare up at him. I pushed you and you pushed back. Fair is fair.
Not when the bond is forcing you.
I keep my smile in check as I reach for the hand at his side. He lets me take it, and I turn it palm side up. The scar cutting across it is a match to my own. I think I knew the night we swam with the stars, I tell him, returning my eyes to his. If you need a blood oath to prove it, I'll do it. He sucks in a sharp breath, eyes igniting with renewed anger. Moving too quickly for me to react, he grips my hair tight at the nape of my neck.
Never offer anyone that, not even me.
I brace my hands against his chest. You did.
Because I know, he says,
eyes jumping between mine.
I've always known.
You're not listening. I tilt my head back even further, making my offer clear. I love you. His next breath leaves him, chest caving when he closes his mouth on mine. The anger and frustration are still there, just underneath the surface of the longing crush of his mouth, tongue eager to taste every part of me. He lifts me, and I wrap my legs around his waist as he walks us to the bed. He waves a hand to the door beyond the sitting room, and there's a metallic sound of the lock sliding into place. Laying me down, he moves to my neck, but I push him away with sure hands. Wait. Standing, I reach across my stomach and pull the soft material of my shirt over my head, taking my brassiere with it. I tuck my thumbs into the waistband of my pants, but Aker stops me.
Let me,
he says, sinking to a knee. He peels the material down my legs, helping me out of my pants one leg at a time before coming back up for my panties. He places a kiss on the skin below my navel, revealing more of me as he pulls my panties slowly down. Then another. Lower, 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 until he lavishes an open-mouthed kiss on that most private bundle of nerves as he lets the panties fall to my ankles. When my body shudders, he grabs my hips to keep me still. "Aker," I plead, threading my hands in his hair. "Please, don't tease me. Don't make me wait. Just, please." He drags his tongue from my center, and I nearly come from the sight alone, his dark eyes shining with mirth before me.
"Patience is not your virtue, princess,"
he says, standing. He removes his towel, but before I can fully appreciate him, he picks me up and lays me on my back, devouring me in another kiss. I open my legs and he sinks into the space. Hard and creating the perfect friction, he thrusts forward and I break from his mouth to catch my breath. He looks down at my body.
"Fuck, you're gorgeous."
He maintains the push of his hips as he grabs me by the jaw and forces his tongue into my mouth. Then he relinquishes me, trailing his hand over my throat, down my chest.
"That's what I wanted to tell you the moment I saw you,"
he says, smoothing a palm over one of my breasts, then the other. I arch my back in encouragement, the harsh calluses of his hands creating the best kind of sensation against my skin and nipples as he traces them with his fingertips.
"I wanted to have you right there, in front of all of them. Consequences be damned."
I moan when he sucks one breast into his mouth, giving it the same decadent kiss as he did my cunt, though this time it's more biting, more urgent. "I think I would have let you," I tell him, keeping a fierce grip on his hair. He groans from my confession, and then he's covering me again, mouth over mine. I suck on his tongue, and a quake shoots through his body. Slipping his hand between my legs, he feels the wetness, spreading it, dipping his middle finger in. I gasp. He stops completely.
"Jovi."
I open my eyes, not having realized I'd shut them. He's looking at me with a newfound wonder.
"You've never?"
I want to lie, but I don't. He can already sense my nerves, so much so he's able to perceive my inexperience, so I shake my head. His breath leaves him in a shudder, fanning across my chest as he looks down at his hand.
"Tell me to stop, and I will."
"If you stop, I might actually kill you," I say. He doesn't laugh.
"I'll let you,"
he says, eyes meeting mine at the same time he pushes a little deeper inside me.
"If you asked me for my life, I'm pretty sure I'd hand it over on a golden platter."
It's hard for me to focus on his words when he presses the hilt of his hand against me. I angle my hips to get better traction when he grinds it in time with the thrusts of his fingers. Two now, as he manages to get another in. I say his name, drawing his attention to my eyes. "Kiss me." So he does. He doesn't stop until I'm a writhing mess beneath him. I'm desperate for the climax as I cling to him, his shoulders and hair and chest, anywhere I can find purchase.
"I want to watch you come,"
he says, eyes traveling the length of me once more.
"I didn't get to see you when you were in my lap."
He observes the flush as it coats my neck and chest. It feels more revealing than being naked in the room of strangers, but in the best way. Like, I want to give him every part of me. At least, every part of me I can part with. It hits me like a tidal wave, and I come apart on his hand, my grip on his hair undoubtedly severe. He doesn't seem the least bit fazed as he removes his hand and looks at the evidence of my arousal, tasting the digits with his mouth. I'm too unwound and satiated to be shocked, but I can't deny that I like the sight of the carnal act. There's nothing but pure desire and gratification as he pulls them out. His hand is wet against my hip as he positions me.
"I'll go slow,"
he says, swallowing as he lines himself up with my opening.
"Say stop, and I will."
I bring his mouth down to mine, but he doesn't let me get lost in it.
I mean it, Jovi. Tell me if it's too much.
Okay. I promise. Then he's pushing in. It leaves me breathless. The sensation of him taking up so much space inside me. He pauses and releases the breath he's been holding. I push the hair from his face when he looks at me, sweat creating a layer of moisture across his skin. Then he kisses me, pushing all the way in. It's a lot to take in. More than enough. Possibly too much.
Jovi, look at me.
I comply, meeting his gaze, unable to stop the drop of water from escaping the corner of my eye. He sees it, eyes tracking its path, and he brushes it away with his thumb.
I'm sorry,
he says.
I don't like the idea of hurting you. I almost wish you'd been with someone else just so you could enjoy our first time together.
I shake my head, a broken laugh leaving me. No, you don't. He shakes his head with a soft smile.
No, I don't.
Pulling back the slightest bit only to push forward again, he sets a gentle pace and kisses me. It takes time, but the pain subsides enough that I start to gather the low pulse of desire. Edgar's breath becomes heavier, his pleasure no longer his goal, rather striving to just get through it with as little harm to me as possible. I both admire and hate it. I raise my hips to meet his thrusts, and he falters.
Jovi,
he warns.
Easy.
Oh, I hate that more. I yank him by the hair, pulling his mouth to mine in a punishing kiss. He growls. In annoyance or acceptance, I don't know. His thrusts become harder, deeper, as I drown in his kiss. It's all-encompassing, all-consuming, and I moan with each punctuation of his hips. He loses the grip on his restraint. A sound I've never heard before leaves his lips, something between a growl and a moan as he stills inside me, pulsing. He thrusts once more before letting his weight cover me. I'm not sure I've ever experienced true peace in my life until right now. Then, like a magnet finally meeting its match, the tether below my sternum snaps into place, an unbreakable bond stretching between us. Edgar braces his weight to look at me, and if I'm not mistaken, there's a sheen of glassiness in his eyes. I kiss him, and even as calm washes over me, dread drops into my gut, because I know that nothing this good lasts forever. Chapter 53. It's dark in the hidden library below Greta's desk, so I carry a lantern from stack to stack. I peruse the shelves, eyes jumping over the spines as I search. The exhaustion in my arms from training this morning is starting to catch up with me, especially after spending the night with Acre. That said, recovery isn't as arduous as it was in Alaha. A gift from awakening and quicker healing on land, thank the gods. I retrieve a book I find interesting and place it in the small pile I've accumulated on the floor. Hearthstones and talismans, dark magic, and now, weaponry. An enthusiastic voice comes from behind me.
I did it!
Yelping, I spin around and find Acre standing on the study table.
Are you trying to kill me?
I say, hand over my pounding heart.
Landing could use some work,
he says, stepping off the table and bouncing on his feet.
But not a bad start.
He leans in to kiss me.
How are you here?
I say, setting the lantern on the table.
The tether,
he says, placing his hand over his heart.
It goes both ways now. Better yet, we can control it.
I push him in the chest.
Why would you do it? Where are you?
Relax. I'm alone in my room, and I still have complete control of myself.
He blinks out of existence, only to emerge on top of the table again.
See?
He leaps from the table and kisses me again like he can't help himself, then scans our surroundings.
Where are we, anyway?
Oh, you don't know? He peers around.
Not that I can remember. Is it part of the hidden passageway in the walls?
I lift my brows at him. If you don't know, then I'm not telling you. He grins at my teasing, hands caging me in among the stacks.
I can take an educated guess and say it has something to do with Greta.
Don't drag sweet Greta into this, I say, toying with the buttons of his shirt.
These books are old.
He wipes the dust from a title, reading it aloud.
Hunting Dragons.
He snorts.
What are you looking for?
I came to find a text on Hearthstone, but anything that catches my interest, really. I undo his top button. He crowds closer.
Did you find anything interesting?
I undo another button. It's the oddest thing, but something interesting found me. Reaching for his belt, he unfastens it, lips grazing mine.
Do you think Greta would mind us defiling her hidden library?
I smile when I reach his pants and undo the tab. We should be quiet, just in case. I feel him line himself up to my entrance, and any retort falls from my mouth as he pushes in. He lifts me with one arm around my waist, pinning me to the shelves.
That seems like a you problem.
You were saying? We've been together 3 times since our first, and I'm convinced it gets better every time. This one included. He drives into me with intention, each push of his hips a mission to break my vow of silence, hand wrapped around my shoulder to hold me in place, the other braced on the shelf beside my head. He pinches my chin after we're dressed, kissing me through short breaths.
Let's place a wager on it next time, yeah?
Then he disappears right before I reach for a book to launch at his head, his laugh echoing off the walls. Greta has the grace to pretend she knows nothing of my transgressions when I place my books on the counter. I know you know, I say, cheeks scarlet as I look at her, and it won't happen again. She adjusts the spectacles on her nose, smiling.
Don't make empty promises, she says, returning to the spine of the book before her. I can see the future, remember?
That only serves to deepen my blush. She laughs.
I am the king's consort, my darling. There's nothing you could ever do that would scandalize me.
I didn't realize you and the king were still...
Oh, no, she says, glancing up. We have not been together in many years, but the label still applies in the eyes of the court.
I check the empty library and sit on the edge of the desk as she works. Do you mind if I ask you something?
Of course, she says. I'm an open book.
I smile at her analogy. It's just, were you in love with the king? Her fingers slow where they're taping down the lining of the inside cover when she looks up.
I was, yes.
There's a sadness in her eyes that tells me not to push. I reach for my books and thank her for allowing me inside her secret library. Although a little less secret than it was this morning, I'm afraid, I say. The smile returns to her face.
There's nothing to be ashamed about, Jovinia. You can never get loving someone wrong.
I let the same words of encouragement that Beau gave me sink in for a moment before departing, issuing her one last thanks in return. I'm almost to the door when she calls my name.
The king was not always the man you know him as today, she says, giving me a pointed look over her spectacles. Every gain of wealth and power comes at a cost. It chips away at your soul a little each time. Do you understand what I'm telling you?
She's brazen to broach the subject of power when the king has so much of it, but I dip my head in a Kenta nod and give her a small, perceptible look. I do. I take the hidden hallway to my room and spend hours poring over the text on Hearthstones, comparing it to what I can find in the book on weaponry. It reiterates what Akers already filled in for me. Weapons made from Hearthstone belong wholly to the Maker. They're the only weapons capable of cutting someone's magic from them, and they're very rare. The materials difficult to find and cultivate. Uma, the destructive light wielder Aker told me of, was overthrown with Hearthstone. She was betrayed by her lover, who ground the material into a fine dust and laced her food with it, causing Uma to fall gravely ill. Despite proving the queen wasn't as untouchable as people had believed, there's still a lingering fear of anyone who wields light. After reading about her transgressions, I almost don't blame them. My eyes begin to cross as I navigate back and forth between the texts. Both books were written long before King Edmund took the throne, and even before the recorded reigns prior. There's no way of determining their accuracy. There's this insistent longing to draw, and I keep glancing toward the sketchbook Acre gifted me. After what feels like the 100th glance, I reach for it. I don't know if Acre is still able to see inside my mind if I draw, but there's only one way to find out. Bending back the spine, I place the tip of my pencil to the fresh paper and close my eyes. I was beginning to wonder if my love of drawing was tied to Alaha somehow, like my loneliness was what drove my art, not my creativity. But no. It came back in full force after the matching bond snapped into place. Opening my eyes, I start with a long drag of my pencil, enjoying the feeling of it on the page. Drawing has always helped clear my mind. I spent the majority of my days in Alaha looking forward to climbing to the roof of my shiel where I could let myself just daydream. I drew anything and everything, learning composition by trial and error. I started by sketching simple trees, then boats, and later birds and insects. I didn't move on to more difficult subjects, such as humans, until Kai. I sigh. Kai. Truth be told, I don't know if I loved Kai. I mean, I know I loved him, do love him, but I didn't love him. I can see how I got it confused. He was my best friend and closest person on an island of people who didn't want much to do with me. Of course I would cling to the one who claimed to love me, the first one to kiss me, to ask how my day was, to want me. But it's nothing in comparison to what I feel with Acre. It was easier than it should have been to leave Alaha, to leave Kai behind. I know if there comes a point where I'm forced to leave Acre, it has the potential to ruin me. I inspect my work thus far and hate it, but that's to be expected at this stage. I'm trying to draw a horse from memory, but it seems obvious enough that it's not a serious attempt, especially with the ribbon and tiara giving away its real identity. Me. I hear Acre's laugh behind me a moment before he kisses the side of my neck at the exact spot I still always catch him obsessing over.
I love it,
he says, wrapping his arms around me.
Thank you.
You seem to have an awful lot of time on your hands today. I turn to look at him. Why are you so sweaty? He lifts a brow at me.
Why don't you come find me?
I'm studying, I say, tapping the texts.
Suit yourself,
he says. Then he disappears. He's going to drive me crazy, I say out loud in the empty room. I close my eyes. The only time I traveled to him while awake was when I was in the bath. I was thinking about him then, but that can't be the only cause, because I think about him a stupid amount all the damn time. No, it has to do with the bond. I concentrate on the tether. It no longer feels one-sided, but instead complete, whole, unwavering. I follow it like I do when I call my dagger. The floor ripples beneath me, and then I'm standing in the courtyard. Hallis and Acre are standing in the center. Three dummies are positioned at the longest length of the yard. Acre smiles, all teeth as he looks at me, not at all surprised to see me.
Come here.
It's strange to be walking in one place and sitting at my desk in another. I concentrate on picking up my pencil, drawing a happy face on the edge of my sketchbook. Then I blink and I'm standing in the courtyard again, picking up where I left off. How? I ask, shaking my head. He does the same.
Your guess is as good as mine, but I have a whole list of new questions for Wells.
Hallis adjusts his grip on a hatchet in his hand, tucking it under his arm.
Assuming you haven't completely lost your mind,
he says to Acre, eyes roaming the space around his friend.
Hi, princess.
We both laugh, then Acre trudges across the yard to the wall where training weapons and props are stored. He grabs a metal chest plate. I give him my back when he gets close, and he loops his arms over my shoulders, placing the plate to my front, securing it with leather binds behind my back. Hallis taps the center of my chest with the back of his hatchet, smiling like the boy from my dreams, all deviant and teasing.
Ready to do some actual training?
I narrow my gaze at him. I don't like the tone he's using.
He's my best mate, Jovi,
Aker says, turning me toward a row of dummies set up at various distances.
I can't rip out his teeth.
Pity, I say.
Aker's chuckle rumbles through my back. You need to exercise your gift. It's like a muscle. It needs to be worked. Keep in mind those near you, Halla says, including your match.
I stand dumbfounded. Can I even summon my magic in this state?
There's only one way to find out,
Halla says, putting the pieces together by Aker's instruction. But I don't even know how to summon my magic. Aker stands to the side, arms folded across his chest.
Do I need to remind you of the scorch mark on the front of your armoire?
Hallis shoots Aker a questioning look.
The what?
That was different, I say. I was running off of my emotions. There's no controlling it when it's like that.
That's not true. I've watched you diffuse your gift to keep it from getting out of hand many times, and it's easier to get paint from a tube than it is to put it back in.
I sigh, but try to imagine a glowing ball of light in my palm. I think of the anger and jealousy I felt, recalling how he kept his betrothal from me and summoning the memory of Irina's beauty, focusing on my guilt about sleeping with a promised man. To no one's surprise, nothing happens. Maybe the guilt was a stretch. I shrug my shoulders, giving him a look that says, "See?" Aker chews on the inside of his cheek, eyes moving toward the targets.
Maybe you need more incentive.
He calls two blades from the wall, one landing in each hand, before tossing me the spare.
Let's have a rematch. Oh, good gods,
Hallis mutters, stepping out of the way.
I don't think this is going to help.
I move just in time to block his incoming jab. He doesn't give me time to recover before I need to block the next swing. I spin away, hoping for enough breathing room to create a game plan, but he follows me. No one is on the veranda to witness our sparring, but I can only imagine what they'd see, or better yet, believe, as Hallis parries with a stumbling hunk of armor with a sword. I'm not limber, I didn't stretch, and my hair keeps falling into my line of sight, yet I'm able to get the upper hand and nick him in the side, the material of his shirt gaping open and exposing his skin. Aker steps back and holds his hand up to signal a pause.
It's the oath,
Aker says, looking at Hallis.
You were right.
I roll my eyes. Didn't think it all the way through, did you? Hallis takes the sword from Aker's hand, assuming a sparring stance in front of me. This is less than a fair fight, I say, looking at Aker.
Give him more credit,
he says, arms folded. I twirl the blade in my hand and offer it to Hallis by the hilt, a customary sign of respect before sparring matches. He knocks the sword away with a swipe of his own.
This is my one and only warning, princess. I may have one less hand, but I won't take it easy on you.
I raise a brow he can't see. He's fighting blind. The largest part of sword work is reading the body language of your opponent. The lack of a hand is the least of my concerns. He attacks first, and I'm gravely unprepared. I make the first few moves in a desperate bid to keep my sword and body intact. Each parry is sloppy, reflexes working overtime to keep up. I yell when his blade scores across the back of my thigh. Only then does he allow me a moment to breathe, but it doesn't last. His arm moves like liquid, body pivoting to and fro as he unleashes an onslaught against me. There's not a chance in hell of getting a strike in when I'm operating on survival alone.
Hallis!
Aker barks in warning. The tip of his sword grazes my cheek, and tendrils of my hair float to the floor.
She won't learn if she isn't pushed,
Hallis says, maintaining his focus on my chest plate as I move opposite of him. He tilts his head, a predator chasing its prey, grin pulling at his lips. When he attacks, I'm cut three more times, chest, hip, and calf.
Enough,
Aker says, his hands up in a threat to call the blades himself. Hallis lets the sword fall to his side, giving in. I use his downed guard as an opportunity to strike. It's short-lived as he parries, regret chasing me with each of his jabs, swings, and hits that slash against my skin. I'm eating up ground as I walk backward,
using my sword more as a shield than a weapon until I feel the cool stone of the wall against my back. Still, Hallis attacks, sword swinging at me from every possible direction. Eyes glazed in the heat of the battle, he doesn't let up, sweat dripping from his temples. Then, like in the dark forest and against Acre, I become frustrated at my helplessness. My magic unfurls with my growing anger and explodes from my hands, first as an attack against Hallis, sending him flying back, then igniting a flame of light down the length of my sword. Shock rushes through me, and I drop the blade, the light snuffing out, leaving just a faint glow emanating from around my hands. Hallis isn't moving. Acre reaches him first, hand on his shoulder as he kneels over him.
You okay?
Yeah.
Hallis moans.
Just got the wind knocked out of me.
Acre slaps him on the chest.
You deserved it.
He stands and watches me come closer, eyes flying over me, categorizing each mark on my skin.
I'm fine,
I tell him between sharp breaths. Slow to get to his feet, Hallis retrieves his fallen sword and slaps the hilt against my abdomen, placing his curled knuckles over the place my tether to Acre pulls from.
Never give away where your magic resides,
he says, voice like gravel around the edges.
You signaled it multiple times. It only takes one person looking at the right time to know your greatest weakness.
I catch the sword so it doesn't hit the ground when he releases it. Acre's eyes are masked, but I have no doubt Hallis can see the heartache his friend holds for him. Hallis slaps him on the shoulder as he passes. Acre unties the plate armor from my chest, sending it back to its place with a wave of his hand, along with the swords. He kisses me, quick and soft.
My bed tonight?
I nod my agreement. Then I'm back in my room, sitting at my desk as if I had never left, either physically or mentally. There's a burn in my muscles, a shortness to my breath, letting me know whatever happens to me as a spectral visitor affects me physically as well. With Hallis's shorn hand in my mind,